I'm Trudy Kerr, and welcome to The Interviewer. In this series, I talk to artists, campaigners, men and women of influence, musicians, performers, sportsmen and women, politicians, businessmen and women, and anyone who shapes the fabric of our society. Karen Schranz is a psychotherapist, a fitness trainer, and also a group coach on the six-pack revolution. Karen holds a bachelor's degree in psychology and two master's degrees, an MSc in Gestalt Psychotherapy and an MSc in Human Resource Management and Training. She's a practicing psychotherapist, and Karen has developed and run workshops on eating disorders and obesity and worked with a number of clients with eating disorders. She has facilitated seminars for psychology students at university covering topics such as life skills, personal development, and sexuality. Karen has also spoken out about fertility, adoption, and her own experiences. But as I said before, Karen is also familiar to a lot of people on the island as the face of six-pack revolution in Malta, the brainchild of an old neighbor of mine, Scott Harrison, a program of diet and exercise that transforms lives. And as a 53-year-old woman who looks half her age, Karen, it really is a testimony to how a healthy lifestyle can make a real difference. Karen, thank you so much for being
Thanks
on The Interviewer.
Having me, Judy. It's such an honor to be here.
Oh, well, it's an absolute pleasure. And I've been thinking about this for a really, really long time. But here's the problem. There's so many things in your introduction that I'd like to touch on. And I feel like we could be here for days. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to tell your own story. I gave you an introduction and said a little bit about your background, but I'm going to ask you just to share your own story. And as we do that, we'll pick out some of the key points that are really important. So how did you get to where you are today?
How far back shall I go?
You can start right at the very beginning.
I've always loved sports and fitness, so that is what, it's probably one of the only things I excelled at school, because that's the only thing that I looked forward to. But growing up, I always felt when I grow up, I'm going to be a mummy. So I never really thought about career or anything like that, because all I ever wanted to be was get married, a traditional kind of wife in those days, and mother, family, a traditional kind of family. And so we started trying to have kids as soon as I got married. And so I didn't have a fallback plan because I thought, okay, I'm going to be a mummy.
But so how old were you when you got married, though?
26.
Okay, so you were fairly young, so you hadn't sort of gone down the whole
career
path.
I'd gone to university, but okay. It was just something I wanted to do, obviously, further my education and everything. But my plan was to get married and have babies. And many of them. But anyway, so we got married and we started trying to have kids. Didn't happen. Didn't happen for 10 years. I mean, we tried and we did so much in that time, so many treatments. But obviously in 10 years, I was like, okay, I had to take a new look at my life and say, okay, what am I going to do if plan A is not working? So I needed to find a plan B. And I loved psychology. We have a family business, but I was never tempted to go into that. I'm not really business-minded. I love working with people, and I love the emotional side of life rather than the business side of life. And so I said, okay, I don't want my life to be unhappy because I haven't got kids. I want to be happy despite the pain, or find, you know, a purpose despite my pain. And I studied psychotherapy, which helped heal me and my pain. And also, you know, I had something to do, and I love what I do. And after 10 years of trying to have kids, we adopted two kids from Russia. They were 8 and 6 years old when they came to Malta, their brother and sister, and Oxy and Nikki. And then I was really fulfilled as a mother, too. But my husband, after like 3 years, my husband's like, let's try IVF one more time. I was like, I can't. I've closed that chapter. I've healed the pain. I've accepted. I've got closure, and I can't reopen that.
And how old were you at that point?
We were, when we adopted, I was 36. And when David started telling me, let's try and have another baby, I was about 39, 40. And
I so this isn't at an early age anyways. This is a bit of a shock.
For sure. And I was like, there's no way I can do this. I don't have the courage. And the only thing that gives you courage is hope. And I had lost hope after we had done 9 IVFs. So I couldn't deal with the disappointment again and the pain. And I had no hope. So I was like, there's no way I can reopen that. I've healed it. And every time we talked about it, I seriously just did this. Because I used to get so anxious and panic and feel that my head swimming with anxiety. And he's like, please, let's do it. And anyway, then he came, my mother, and he came on the same day with this article that they saw in the newspaper, some English newspaper, of a story of a lady similar to me, unexplained infertility, 40 years of age, multiple failed IVFs, and she did this new treatment that helped her have a baby. And that gave me hope. So the hope gave me the courage to try again.
So what was the treatment, if you don't mind me asking?
It was some kind of selection of, some kind of selection pre-fertilization to the egg. Some kind of treatment pre-fertilization to the egg. But when we got to the clinic in England, the doctor was like, there's no such thing as unexplained infertility. You just haven't found why you're not getting pregnant.
But, well, hang on a second. Hang on, Karen. I hear a lot of women being told they have unexplained infertility.
And I always used to say, I've got unexplained infertility. Everything seems okay. Everything works, but I'm not getting pregnant. And he said, there's no such thing as unexplained. It is, you just haven't found the problem. There is a problem, it's just not very evident. You know what it is, it's hard to find. And he said, and it normally lies within the immune system when it's unexplained, because the immune system is so complex and there's so many factors that can affect pregnancy. So he said, I will do the treatment that you read about, but I'd also like you to take this blood test. It's an immune system test. And I was like, I've done them all, forget it, there's nothing. And he's like, this is a new test, and it's only available in the US. I have to send your blood to Chicago, this one particular lab. So we did it, and we found the problem. Basically, a very technical story, but I'll say it as easily as possible. If I needed an organ, David is a perfect match for me, because I don't recognize him as a foreign body.
Okay.
So when you create an embryo, the body, your immune system recognizes it as a foreign body because it's half a man.
Okay.
And it creates what's called a blocker around this embryo. And so when it goes down into the uterus, this is at fertilization point, it's still in fallopian tubes. When it goes down into the uterus, the immune system there is even stronger, and it's protected against the immune system, and it can embed. I'm not recognizing David as a foreign body. There's something in my blood, some protein. I give you the name if you like, HLA-DQ alpha. That's not true. Really, that's not
true. There's no test at the end of this, is there? Thank goodness.
I'll ask you at the end, what was the protein's name? And anyway, and that was it. And I just had to take blood serum from another man for 3 months in a row. And basically it was injected under the skin to create a severe allergic reaction to me. I had welts here and welts here, and I couldn't put anything on them. They were like stings, like huge mountains. And the bigger, the better, because it was meant my immune system was really reacting. And then I could have tried naturally, but I was 41 by then, and I didn't want to take any risks, so we went ahead with the IVF. I had only 3 eggs, and they selected the healthy egg, because 2 of them were not normal, genetically normal, common to a 41-year-old. And anyway, it fertilized, and I was told less than 6% chance of getting pregnant because of your age. It's not even a good quality embryo. And 10 days later, I took a pregnancy test, because I couldn't wait. I was just so excited. And I was pregnant. And my mom was like, don't tell anyone. But I was like, I've waited so long to...
So this was beyond 10 years. This had been...
This 15 years later. 15. And then I had Lily, who's a bit spoiled. She's 10 now. But for the first 2 years, I just could not put her down. I held her. Like,
this is a child you had waited for 15 years, and at one point you'd given up hope completely that this would ever happen. Now, I mean, we have a whole other Karen story that we need to explore, okay. But let's stay with this just for the minute, because I'm fairly sure there are a lot of women and couples and men who can identify with this. Just to recap this for a second, you've tried for 10 years, you've tried absolutely everything, every IVF, every fertility treatment, and you were told you have an unexplained issue with fertility. And unexplained, I've heard people say this before, mm-hmm. just means they don't know what the explanation
exactly.
is. You went on to have two beautiful children through adoption. Grown-ups now.
25 and 23.
Good grief. Wow. So real grown-ups yes. now. So two beautiful kids through adoption. Then it was your husband that said, let's give it one more go. And you come across this article.
Lily's thanks to him.
You come and you go to the UK. Now, you talked about this treatment. It sounded morose. It sounded awful.
I think out of everything I had done, like all the treatments, all the tests, all the investigations, all the moments I've been in clinics, like kind of explored and whatever, this was the worst. It was the most painful. Because it was so itchy and burned. It was like bee stings, but that you couldn't calm down with anything because they were...
And this was just to aggravate the immune system enough.
To make my immune system super sensitive, so sensitive that it recognizes David as a foreign body. Because it wasn't.
This is incredible because obviously technology now enabled... or not even 10 years ago, enabled doctors or this particular doctor and this particular blood testing situation to be able to identify what the problem is. But infertility affects one in four couples, one in four couples within Europe, one in four. This is a huge number. And of course, I should imagine there's an awful lot of people within that percentage that have the same issue, that are told it's unexplained infertility. And it wouldn't have mattered.
If you can, if you have the courage, if you have even sometimes the financial ability, keep digging. You know, it's not, if you really want it, I mean, no, that sounds bad because everyone really wants it. If you can, keep going. Because today there is a technology to help most couples have their longed for baby.
Was there any point, once you started this second phase, this new, your husband has said, let's try again, was there any point where you were just like, this is not going to happen? I found my peace. I'm sorry, but just know I'm walking away from this.
When he kept trying, when he was asking me, let's do it. Yes, for a long time. Till the hope was reignited with that article. I still have the article. It was fun. This surgeon in his suit holding a baby and the story. I still have the article that gave me that little bit of hope to try one more time. And I mean, when I was approaching 40, I was like, this is it, you know, it's over. There's no hope now, but you can never say no or never or no hope, you know.
Well, your story is one that I hope gives hope to a lot of people, because obviously, you know, you're talking about having 15 years. That's a very long time to be longing for something. So when you found out, that moment when you found out you were pregnant, you must have been...
My mum was like, don't go and tell anyone. Please keep it a secret just till it's safe. And I told her, Mum, I've waited 15 years to be able to shout out from the top of the mountains, I'm pregnant. I called everybody I knew. On that day, I'm pregnant. She's like, you're crazy. I don't care. You know, it's not going to protect me from pain if I lose this baby, not having shared it. Okay, maybe I'll have to more explaining to do, but I'm so happy now. I want to share it with the world. And if I have to deal with loss, this isn't going to, keeping it to myself is not going to make the loss any worse. any easier. So
I love your rationale, your thoughts about that. You're like, you're celebrating the fact that after
today,
15 years, you got pregnant. You
and I can call my friends and tell them, I'm pregnant, you know, because I had to be always happy for them, but I had to be on the receiving end of, like, I'm pregnant. And each time I heard that, although I'm obviously happy for them, my sadness was not because I didn't want them to have babies. I always felt, when is it going to happen to me?
Can I ask you about this? Because this is something that we have touched recently on, not just this podcast, but also the parallel podcast Empowered. And there are an awful lot of things that we don't talk about as women. And there are some women like myself who can't, who literally cannot have children, who cannot have children. And there is, we talked to Maxine on Empowered and she had had a miscarriage. And we've talked to Tez on this show who had difficulty giving birth because she had an emergency C-section. And we as women, we're not very kind to each other. We don't talk about these things. We don't open up these conversations. But you just mentioned there seeing other women who getting their families, having their families. And I should imagine by the time that you came to being pregnant,
they all had teenagers.
They had teenagers, right?
So I had to make a whole new, my friends today are all in their 30s, just hitting 40 now. So I had to make a whole new set of friends because my friends were ready to go out and start traveling on their own. And I couldn't join them because I had a newborn at home, which I was very happy about. Don't get me wrong, but I had to make, it was lonely at first till I made some new friends.
But did you ever feel, and it was something that Maxine said, did you ever feel that not being able to have a child naturally affected you and your confidence as a woman?
I just need to swallow the lump in my throat because even though I've had a baby and it's like the pain lives in you forever. It never really goes away. It's healed, but it still can really come up like when you talk about it, you know, and so I'll take a breath. I used to look at animals. I used to look at cats with babies, with kittens, and I'd be like, even they work, you know, I don't work. Yes, the answer is yes. It destroys you because you just feel you're not a woman. I felt I wasn't a woman. I felt I didn't work as a woman. I felt I wasn't like her. I didn't belong.
Did you find, I mean, you were a mother, though. You had two children who you had adopted. Mm-hmm. Without wanting to cast any aspersions on that adoption is not being a mother, because I don't believe that for a second. But did you feel that when you had your own daughter that you had given birth to, that fulfilled you as a mother in ways that you couldn't have been fulfilled before?
Yes, mainly because I loved pregnancy. I always, even as a kid, would look at a pregnant woman and think, oh my God, I can't wait to be pregnant one day and feel the baby kick. And I just, in my head, pregnancy was really something glorified, you know, and I looked forward to it. And my friends used to tease me. They'd be like, you're going to be the first one of our clique to have a baby because you're the only really, really maternal one. I was maternal from a little, my dolls and everything. I was a tomboy, but a maternal tomboy. And so, yes, I longed to be pregnant. I longed to know what it was like to feel a baby inside you and to feel it grow. And also my kids came to me when they were 8 and 6 and I love babies. So I had missed out on the mothering of an infant. I was still a mother of, you know, school children, but I longed to be the mother. There's something about having a baby that, I don't know, I longed for. I really yearned for it with every pore of my body. So, and it's really silly, but just before I got pregnant with Lily, I found a cat. Can I talk about this too? I found
Absolutely.
A kitten.
Absolutely.
I found a kitten on my son found a kitten on our doorstep. It was on our doorstep, literally. It was like sent from somewhere. And, it was one day old. It still had its umbilical cord attached to it. And we took it to the vet, and his mommy must have dropped him somewhere. And the vet said, he's not going to survive, but you can try and feed him and do all the things his mommy cat would do, like clean his bum because they get constipated. So I was putting olive oil in all the time, rubbing his tummy. I kept him in my top. I took him everywhere with me. And when I traveled to England to do IVF, I had like, I missed him. I mean, it was crazy. I poured all this 15 years of waiting, of yearning for an infant onto this baby kitten. And literally, I bottle fed him. I woke up 3 times a night. It was a bit too much. It was too much. I mean, I went to therapy. I as a psychotherapist, I have to go to therapy to work, you know. But I worked on it because it was too much. I had separation anxiety from my cat. When I was pregnant, my doctor put me in hospital for 6 weeks, even though it was a perfect pregnancy, but he just was worried about me. He just said, this baby is too precious. And David had to bring the cat to the hospital to visit. I used to go into the car park to see my cat.
But the cat made it, obviously.
Yes, the cat made it. The cat just died a few weeks ago. He was 12.
I'm so sorry. It's okay. But he made it to a grand age.
He made it. I mean, and when Lily came home, he suffered from depression. He lost all his fur, and he couldn't deal with the fact that I suddenly had Lily. So it was quite dramatic for him.
Good heavens above.
I digressed.
No,
but I was trying to say, yes, it was special because I had a lot of yearning to be the mother of an infant. And that was the only difference. I was a mother, and my maternal instincts were, my need to be a mother was fulfilled. I loved my mother role. I loved being the mother of my 2 kids. But I still was so grateful to be able to experience being the mother of an infant.
Now, you just mentioned being a psychotherapist there. I'm assuming being a psychotherapist helped the situation. It helped you deal with the situation. Or does it not work like that?
In my I studied to become a psychotherapist. Okay, so back to my life. After 8 years, in one of my IVFs, I did get pregnant, but I miscarried twice, within 3 months of each other. And I think probably they were some of the darkest days of my life, because I thought the hard part was getting pregnant. Once I was pregnant, it would be fine. But anyway, it wasn't. And a friend of mine who we were studying for the master's together knew how much I liked psychotherapy and psychology, and she asked me if I would. She was asked to do these life skills things for university students, and she couldn't. So she said, why don't you go? And anyway, I started doing them. And I was hanging out with all these psychologists, psychotherapists, and I felt I belonged. I loved it. We'd sit in the refectory and be listening to them talk about their clinics. And it was just like, okay, this is me. This is who I want to be. This is where I belong. And I started studying psychotherapy at that point when I was just about to adopt. And I was dealing with a miscarriage as well. So to be a psychotherapist, you have to do like 200 hours as the client. So it helped. Yes, it did help me.
Wow.
It helped me. It helped me heal a lot of stuff. We all spent a lot of time crying in those training hours. But my tears were mainly to do with this.
Karen, just talking to you now, I mean, you've touched on, as far as families go, you've touched on everything. You've touched on miscarriage, infertility, adoption, a late pregnancy and parenthood.
Okay.
Because you were in your 40s and now you're 53 and you still have a young one.
I have a 10-year-old, and I have to say it was easier being a mother of a 10-year-old in my 30s than in my 50s. She gets away with so much more because I don't have the energy either. I was really strict. My adult kids now tell me, you know, we never would have got away with that. You were so strict with us. You were so mean. But I had so much more energy. I could.
Karen, you were just explaining my childhood, because I had an older brother and then who was only 3 years older than me. I had a younger brother who was 7 years younger than me. He got away with anything he wanted.
That's because your mum had no energy for him. Seriously.
Now I'm seeing the whole thing different. And now I'm going to say he wasn't just the favourite child. Mum could not be bothered to tell him off.
That, seriously, I don't have the energy. I don't have the patience. It's easier to say, do what you want. And it's really bad. And I know that it's wrong. And I need to have more boundaries with her because she's getting to the point where she's having a bit of attitude. And so I must be stricter, and I'm aware of it, and I'm working on it. But it's tiring. I being a menopausal mum of a 10-year-old is not a good idea.
I mean, seriously, Karen, you've been through everything. Karen, you've amazed me. You have absolutely amazed me, and I know that we're going to talk again, and I want to thank you for being so unbelievably open about your experiences. I have newfound respect for you. I'm really glad for the HRT, because now I'm not so scared of you. but I'm really grateful for you being on the interview.
Can I give you another good cure for the irrational anger that you might feel? Battle ropes.
Battle ropes, there you go, you hit it first, whack them out of battle ropes.
Oh my goodness.
And get all your frustration
Slamming.
Out.
It's better than taking it out on the husband.
Well, yes, I would say it probably is. Karen, thank you so much for being on the interview. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure, and I've loved every minute.
To listen to this edition of The Interviewer again or other exciting interviews, head towards Spotify or SoundCloud and search for The Interviewer.